It's the Agribusiness Report. Special guest today, John Duff with the National Sorghum Producers. First, let's go to the hills of a G7 meeting. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
It's important and necessary to note that we are dealing with food security issues today because of the disruption of grain production in Ukraine and export of grain previously and oils previously produced in Ukraine. But we also are faced with the possibility of production losses in the future as a result of climate. So it's important and necessary for the G7 nations to commit themselves to not only helping Ukraine through this very difficult circumstance and the nations that are negatively impacted by the disruption in Ukraine, but also to make sure that we are continuing our efforts at sustainable productivity growth.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by John Duff. John is Executive Vice President with the National Sorghum Producers, and John will start the conversation off with planters rolling. Really, it just is a gentle reminder, it's that time again to get a crop in the field, but we do have a few weeks still for the sorghum crop to go in. Any ideas on acreage this year?
Well, we're feeling good overall, I think, about acres. We're probably looking at steady acres as a floor, which in years when we have big acreage increases and significant price action like we had last year, flat acreage is a huge win for this industry. So we're feeling good about that. Time will tell, though, over the next couple of weeks or, you know, month and a half, about whether we could actually be up. I think that there's a number of factors actually that might push us up in acreage. Of course, the crop in the South Texas lower river and valley is actually looking really good. They finally caught some timely rain, and so that crop is starting to head down there, and it looks really good. As you mentioned, planters are rolling up here now. And praise the Lord for the rain that we've had over the past week, that goes for, down here, but also up north into Kansas as well. We're very, very blessed with some rains that actually may allow us to get a crop up and germinated. Certainly the drought map looks worse than it did in 2011, but in 2011, we never got rain like this, and we never even had clouds. And so that certainly looks positive, and we're really excited for what that means. It probably also means less managing around insurance guarantees and more actual strategic planting of crops with the intent of maybe actually being able to get something with rain coming. And so I think that we actually could see increases in some areas where there was no prospect for a crop, and thus decisions would be made differently around insurance guarantees. Now there's prospects for a crop, and so we might actually see some crop in areas down here in particular that we wouldn't otherwise have seen. So we're pretty excited overall. Input prices are a drag, but crop prices certainly are good, and if we can get any help this summer, I think everybody would be really, really excited to deliver on, $6, $7, $8 grain.
You know, we're talking about really the supply side still of the equation. Demand side really hasn't changed much. The appetite from the buyers is still there, right?
And that's right. We haven't seen the strong purchases from China in the new crop year that we would like to see at this point. But that's more a function of global uncertainty than a lack of demand there. I think the statement from one of the largest buyers a couple of weeks ago is we will buy the entire crop plus some, but for geopolitical concerns. That's a constant, discussion and worry. And so with the uncertainty, that creates challenges for getting those purchases on the book. But for the fundamental demand, it is there, and the destruction has not started. It is significant. We still run a very, very short supply of feed grains from a global perspective, and that's fixing to get even tighter. So I think that we're in a good shape overall from a fundamental demand perspective.
Okay, we've worked in the idea of climate into this conversation in a couple of ways, so maybe this is a great time to just go ahead and kick it off here. Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities. There's up to $1 billion for pilot projects creating market opportunities for commodities using these climate smart practices. Okay, so I've read that part, but what's it mean and why is sorghum involved?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a mouthful. Climate smart ag and forestry in itself is a mouthful. And it is. It's $1 billion. It's a huge pot of money. It's a huge effort. Of course, the grant program that you're referring to, $1 billion, saw extremely strong interest. We applied along with 450 other, along with 349 other groups, for a total of 450 programs that were proposed under this. And in a nutshell, what USDA is trying to do is figure out how and help the market figure out how to function, the ecosystem services market, that is. There's a lot of opportunity, obviously, in sustainability and carbon and general ecosystem services for American agriculture. We are the leaders in agricultural sustainability, bar none. And we are largely not compensated for that. Apart from the compensation that comes back for the commodity production itself. And so everyone's trying to figure out how to monetize that, how to get farmers compensated for that. But a lot of people are calling it the Wild West right now in terms of what these markets are paying for, how they're paying, what frameworks they're using, what methodologies, the value practices, how they're compensating the farmer, what the contract looks like, what the terms look like. All those things are very, very up in the air and very unknown. And so what this program is trying to do is get to the bottom of all that. Say, here's what the practices should be. Here's what the value should be. Here's how the market should function. Here's how the contract should look. Here's what the terms should be. And help farmers really get better opportunities that are safer, less risky, that compensate them better and more fairly for the value of the ecosystem services markets that they're providing. And we submitted a program and project, like I said, just like 349 other groups did. And it's, you know, it offers a menu of practices valued on how an ecosystem services market in California values them. Farmers will have the opportunity to pick and implement those practices in order to receive compensation.
Now, in a way, isn't this the ideal way to really roll out a program? Is go to the people who will actually be doing the program and really have the knowledge and getting the advice from them, rather than a more of a legislative approach where they try to figure out what you want?
You know, it really is. I think it received a fair amount of criticism, even from folks in our industry on the front end, that, oh, this is $1 billion and it's a really quick turnaround. We ended up having about 90 days to submit a proposal, and it wasn't a very extensive proposal. It was an extensive effort, but the application itself wasn't very long. And a lot of folks were understandably apprehensive about how a process like this could really translate into real answers. But, you know, after going through that process and thinking through all the things that we had to think through to put a program together, and to put a program together that over the next 5 years will lead to the outcome that we want, and that's clarity in ecosystem services markets for sorghum farmers, I think that it was a pretty good way to do it. It made us think pretty creatively about things. And I think with 450 different approaches, there's going to have to be some good ideas that come from all that. And will there be waste? Will there be inefficiencies? Absolutely. There always is. But frankly, that's part of the reason you want government to fund some of these things, is so that we've got the freedom to fail and realize that, hey, that was a bad idea. And so government kind of de-risks it. And hopefully 5 years from now and 450 shots at it, we will have a good idea of how to better compensate the farmer for the value of these practices.
John, just a couple of minutes left here, and some may not even know this. How involved the sorghum industry is when we're talking about carbon markets, the climate debate. Sorghum's been there for many years now, right?
Absolutely. We kicked off our application talking about sorghum's survival over 10,000 years of climate variability, which has led to us being able to trademark it as the resource-conserving crop. You can't get a trademark for just anything. You can't come up with something that isn't true or nobody's ever thought of and used in any form of communication before and trademark it. You can't do it. And we got a trademark in extremely short order for the resource-conserving crop because we've been using that language for many years, and the crop has survived through 10,000 years of climate variability. And so we've been at that table. We've been touting our sustainability attributes for many, many years now. And anybody familiar with the crop knows that it's a water-sipping crop. It waits for moisture. It tolerates the heat pretty well relative to other crops. It adds structure and organic matter back to the soil. It has a number of other attributes that consumers demand and desire these days, from no gluten to the fact that it's an ancient grain to many antioxidants, more than blueberries, and high protein, high fiber. It really checks a number of boxes in the area of sustainability, regardless of how you define that term. And we're really, really excited now to hopefully get it recognized as the resource-conserving crop that it really is.
Okay. We want to learn more about what's going on with this or the national sorghum producers. Can we find it online?
Absolutely. Sorghumgrowers.com. We're on any social media platform that anybody's on. And you can call my cell. I'd love to hear from you, 806-638-5334. We would love to visit with you and engage with you in any way possible.
John Duff is Executive Vice President, National Sorghum Producers, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Once in a while, a product comes along that completely reinvents its category. Introducing the Rogator C-Series Professional Grade Self-Propelled Sprayer from Challenger. Its advanced yet simple solutions deliver ultra-precise crop application, save time, and make you money. We call it intelligent farming. You can call it the new benchmark in professional application. Learn more at LivingstonMachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
Why sorghum?
I think sorghum is a smart choice for growers because it just fits well with our limited moisture. There's a lot of improvement the last few years. It's just been a really good crop for us. It just works.
Sorghum has the ability over many crops to sit and wait on moisture, so it's a smart choice there.
Sorghum is a smart choice because it is flexible and tough. It's a good crop.
Rain or shine, sorghum is the smart choice.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, John Duff with the National Sorghum Producers.
At Golden Harvest, our best skill is knowing how to listen. From our Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to our expert insights housed in the Illuminate digital agronomy platform, everything we offer is an answer to what we've heard from you. This is how we listen.
Copyright 2021 Syngenta. The trademarks or service marks used herein are the property of a Syngenta Group company. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners.
Did you know that the world-famous Café Du Monde has always used cottonseed oil to fry their beignets? Cotton Board invested over $1.5 million into cottonseed research and marketing last year with Cotton Incorporated, including research on the health benefits of cottonseed oil compared to other oils. Our goal is to make cottonseed oil the preferred cooking oil in kitchens across the country, like a Café Du Monde in New Orleans. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
It's the Agribusiness Report. You can follow the national sorghum producers online, sorghumgrowers.com.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton, bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Gary Crawford reports.
What kind of year can U.S. corn growers expect? Well, USDA's just come out with its supply and demand forecasts for the upcoming season. First, USDA projecting corn planted acreage to be down almost 4 million acres from last season. Harvested acres down 3.7 million, the slow planting pace keeping yields the same as last season at 177 bushels an acre. USDA Outlook Chairman Mark Jekanowski says, do the math with the acres and all, you get a possible crop of
just under 14.5 billion bushels. That's down from last year. Last year's crop came in at 15.1 billion bushels.
This will cause ending stocks for corn to shrink and set producers up to get higher prices.
So our first season average price forecast for corn for the new crop year is at $6.75 a bushel.
Up 85 cents from this current season. Gary Crawford, Washington.